Okay, welcome to class again today. Good to have everybody here, and you were a great class yesterday. I had an interesting experience, a couple of interesting questions since yesterday, and one young man even told me that what I don't know is that he just purchased a man lift. And we won't say whether he took a loan out for it or not, but he literally did. Just ordered a man lift, so I thought that was just ironic. If anything like that happens today, don't think that I know any stories about you that I'm trying to fault or make anybody feel bad. So, and nothing wrong with borrowing money to purchase a man lift. So we're going to start with answering the Adam, Bob, Claire, Dave question. 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. What, do you want to just blurt it out? What do you think the shortest amount of time is? Just say. 17, 19. I keep hearing. Okay. So do you 19s want to start, or do you want to see if the 17s are correct first before you say what you think about it? 17s or 19s? Yes?
I was a 19, but I switched to 17, so I forgot that Adam didn't have to walk himself across.
Okay. You forgot Adam would have to walk himself across. So you switched to... Now what? You said you were a 19 and you switched to 17. That would go the other way, 19 to 21, wouldn't it? You'd be... Or...
So he's already across once he walks the last person.
Correct. All right, who wants to go first? You want to go first? Tell us how you did it.
I walked across the bridge back twice.
I did it mentally. I skipped all the steps.
You skipped all the steps.
I took 2, 5, and 10 together, and then I was like, oh, and Adam, sure.
Okay. All right, so he did 2, 5, and 10 together.
I'm doing mental math. I mean, can you follow
me? I can't follow you. And you know, it's an interesting thing. So in math class, we talked about the simple, or we mentioned the simple interest formula a little bit yesterday, the PRT thing, and I'm a stickler for asking at least 7th and 8th graders to fill in every detail under the formula for quite a while until they really feel like they have a good grasp of the numbers, and then they're allowed to start jumping things together. And they get a little frustrated with me that I make them do it for so long. So keep that in mind. Let them, as soon as you feel it's safe, to let them... start taking shortcuts. At least that's my experience. I think it's perfectly safe for you to take shortcuts. And if they're okay with taking shortcuts and getting to the correct answer, even though they get a few wrong, if they can go back and know how to use, you know, longhand and make it happen, then I'm okay. But if they've not gotten a proper grasp of longhand, then they're not going to do well with all their shortcuts. They like it because it doesn't take long, but they're not going to get good grades. All right. So anybody want to go through this longhand for us? Where's a 17? Raise your hand. Who's a 17? Okay, go ahead. How would you do it?
2 and 1 go over. Either 1 or 2 go back. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
5 and 10 go back over, and then the other one comes back, and they both go over.
Everybody follow that?
Makes sense, yeah.
Makes sense, doesn't it? So what's disgusting about problems like this is that when you see the answer, it's just simple. So maybe a little slower. You're doing like I did yesterday. You understood it so well, you flew through it, right? And that's how I felt with the 11s. I felt badly afterward, not because of flying through it, but because you didn't get the savor of the moment. When you understand something new in math, a new concept in math, it's like, I don't know, it's like a good donut. You don't want to just gobble it because then it's gone. So you take a bite, and you take another bite. And that's how I feel about discoveries and numbers. Every time you discover something new, it's like, ah, can I just kind of sit here and just soak this up, right? And I feel like we didn't do that with the 11. So slower, one more time, please.
So 1 and 2 go over.
Adam and Bob go across the bridge.
Then either 1 or 2 can come back.
Doesn't matter which.
Then whichever, say 1 went back.
Adam stays.
He carries the light back again. 5 and 10 go over. The 2 have to stay together because of the larger number. And then the other one comes back. And then they can both go back over again.
All right. That's the other one.
Go ahead. What was that?
Sure.
Why not work for us? Sure.
We can do that on the board. Why not? So we have our bridge, right? And we have 1 and 2. So we want to get to this side, and we have A, B, C, and D all on this side. So A and B travel over, and it takes how long?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. A or B may travel back. Right?
Why does it not matter which one? Because it takes 2 minutes for Bob to travel back.
Well, then you would save time the next if you
right.
Assume they went first.
At the end, the opposite one will do it.
Yeah.
At the end, the other one will have to be there to do it. So he just traveled back. We can say one or two. Why don't we send A back? That just seems right. That seems right to send the fastest guy back. So A comes back. So we add what?
1 minute.
1 minute. And then he hands the torch off to C and D. C and D come back. And it has taken them how long?
10 minutes.
Good. And now whoever was left, here's where we come to our two or one.
B.
So we had sent A. B is left. So now B comes back. It's like this. And took him two, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And now A and B may return again to take how many more?
Two more,
correct.
The punchline is that we all want to send Adam over every time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we get hung up on that thing of trying to send Adam over every time.
That is good.
And also, I think we forget the, or we don't see how it works to put D and C together. That was a little counterintuitive for me, too, to put D and C. Like, I wanted to, but I thought this isn't going to work. We can't send them together because who's going to bring it back? That's why we fast forward A and B and leave one of them there and
bring the other one back.
Okay, good. And on tomorrow's problem, and I'm going to refuse, if you want to talk about that one today among yourselves, you may, but I will refuse to have a discussion up here about it, if that's okay. So read that carefully. Three men book a hotel room for $30. They pay $10 each. After they leave the front desk, the hotel proprietor decides he can sell the rooms for $5 cheaper and returns the money via the bellboy. Since the bellboy can't divide five evenly by three, he gives each man $1 and pockets the two. Sort of light-fingered there. Now each man has paid nine. Nine plus nine plus nine equals 27 plus two equals 29. Where's the missing dollar? And I just told, this was, again, compliments of Jonathan. He mentioned this to me yesterday morning, and I told him it reminds me of a saying that my dad said that I referred to yesterday about figures don't lie, but liars figure. So it is. How's that?
That problem's a liar.
The problem's a liar, or the fellow who's figuring is a liar. And they'll do that to you. You know, you have to watch it. People will try to get you, and this is how they do it. So I don't think that's too hard to picture in your mind. If you want to work on that till tomorrow, and we'll see what kind of answers we get back, you're welcome to talk about it afterward if we have time and go from there. All right, so I'd like to talk, before we actually get into math this morning, I'd like to do something a little, or this afternoon, sorry. I'd like to do something a little bit different. So we're going to take, and I got this idea from another math teacher. He said that he was in school one day, and the teacher had them making chains for something, and I forget what it was for. Were they writing virtues on the chain links or something? I forget what it was, but he was writing on the chain links, paper chain links, and they were supposed to put these together. So he got tired, being a young boy, and I forget how old he was. He wasn't very old, but he got tired of just making regular links, so he started folding them. One fold, he's like, that's cool, he's going to do this, you know, just fold them and see what happens to it. And he kept going, and it literally just looked like a kinky chain, right? And that's all we see when we see this. Now, do any of you know what would happen if we would take this and I would cut right here, and you ladies probably have done this before somewhere along the line. What is going to happen if I cut this right down the center very, very, very carefully and keep cutting until I reach the point that I began at? Nobody knows. All right, good. It's going to do what?
Double the length.
Double the length.
Two interlocking rings.
Anybody else?
One big circle.
Fall apart? No? No fall aparts. One big circle. Is it still going to be folded? Still going to be folded. Why? These guys are talking a lot. Girls, what do you think? Do you see what's happening? Have you done it before? It's so fun to do the first time. I just loved it. It kind of gets old after a while. Now look at this. Who said double the ring size? You want to stand up? No, you don't have to, but look at that. Okay, look at that. Now, my question to you is this. What would happen if you would do this off-center, not down the middle off to the one side? Does anybody know what happened?
I think that's one of the two interlocking.
Is that one of the two interlocking?
Two interlocking rings.
Yeah, do it again to get two interlocking rings. Do it off to the side, it'll just
All right, so we're going to stop there. That's actually, I'd love to keep on going, but we're going to run out of time. Plus, that's what the math teacher did to me, the one that I was watching. He said, you have to go home and try it just for fun. So that is not because I'm trying to be cruel here. It's because I think that's what we should do to our students. So what it does to them, this doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter at the end of the day. What it does to them, it creates a sense of wonder in them. And you don't really care about this paper ring. I know you don't. But students do. And when they get home, they will actually go try working with stuff that you didn't actually take them to the end of. I believe it's rule number two in, I forget again where I read this, but rule number two in teaching math is that you're supposed to let your students struggle. All right, so you're supposed to present them with information and then let them struggle. And he truly used the word struggle. He said, sit there and watch them grappling with it and watch them struggle. Not in a cruel way. I think rule number four was the one about saying yes that we referred to yesterday. Say yes and affirm that you heard what they said. But he said rule number two is let them struggle because they'll learn a lot more that way. All right, so now we're going to ask, questions. So one question that came in overnight was, or last evening late was, is it true that the little red squiggly line that you get on the computer when you're typing that says you've misspelled a word, is it true that that is actually the computer picking up that there is a number sentence? They have number sentences pre-programmed into the vocabulary part of the computer that generates a squiggly line. So in other words, a number sentence like 4 plus 3 plus 5 and the answer is wrong, and then it generates a squiggly line. And I had no idea. Who asked that question? I forget who it was. There you go. Okay. So I I WhatsApp my friend who writes code, and he sent me a very short reply. I sent him a very short question too because he appreciates communicating that way, and so do I if we're short on time. He sent a short reply. He said, I can't imagine why they would do anything like that in code. He said, why you would change a vocabulary program to operate off mathematics, I have no idea. So his idea, he's pretty adamant that it's not that way. He does write code, but he doesn't write this kind of code, so who knows? I don't know if that's true or not, but interesting, very interesting question. Another one came in about a hexagon. Does anybody know a formula for finding a hexagon, so finding the side of a hexagon compared to its, what we would call, radius in a circle, like the apophthegm? Does anybody know a formula for that, to find what we would refer to as a radius versus a side? Because if you think about it, the bigger the hexagon gets, the bigger the sides, there has to be a direct correlation, right? Who asked that question? There we go.
It was an octagon.
You used octagon. Okay, so I did hexagon. I was just studying about the hexagon. Octagon would probably work the same way. Let me think a second. Yeah, probably would. So it goes into algebra pretty deep, actually. But there is something that I found that's very interesting that any of us can show our students, and this is going to relate to, if you don't mind, I'll just use the hexagon. Just because that's what I was looking at since I talked with you. That's not a perfect one, obviously, but we have the six sides. So what we like to notice in math, or what I like to notice in math, especially in geometry, is shapes that you can get out of shapes. So I don't know how much information you were thinking you would have. You're thinking just the percentage, right? Like what is this? Hang on. That length compared to this one. Is that what you were asking? So from center to any point on the side compared to a side,
well,
or to an edge.
That would work. It was my friend brought me the question. I just said, like, let's say I want to build a 12-foot gazebo. Can I figure out the length of this?
Okay. Okay. So.
So radius or diameter.
Uh-huh. So all I did was I got to picturing the triangles that you can find in here, and thought that if you have. One or two numbers, so we can use the Pythagorean rule, so we can go a squared, b squared, c squared. We could do something like that if we would know any of the measurements. But I do not have any idea what the percent is. What decimal did you come to that you thought was really close?
I have it written down at home. But
you have it written down at home. Okay. Okay. And was it consistent?
As far as I could find, and that was just for trial and error.
And did you use like 20 or 30 feet, or did you use just a ruler on paper? Because either would work.
Uh-huh.
To keep it simple.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Good.
And then I don't remember how big I went.
Good. Yeah, it's lots of fun. Okay.
You're saying from where to where now?
So he was saying... So
I can't see the board.
You can't see it, I'm sorry. So he was saying, what is the relationship between this compared to, were you thinking angle or straight in? Do you know about that? Because, so we're going to have, this would be the hypotenuse, obviously, and this would be your... B in this case.
Kind of either.
Either.
Okay. Yeah.
Just trying to find the relationship.
Right to the center.
To the center. Correct. To the center. Anybody have any ideas for him? Yes, Gilbert.
So that one of those two triangles there.
Yes.
Would be a 30, 60, 90 triangle.
Yes, that is correct.
So the longer leg would be...
In this case, like if I'd be using this one...
Yeah, that leg?
This leg?
Not the hypotenuse, but the longer leg.
The longer leg, got it.
Would be the shorter leg down the square root of 3, I think. That's the relationship of the 30-60-90.
That's the relationship of 30-60-90. That's true.
Yeah.
No, so that's true.
If you take that, take the radius, divide it by the square root of 3, and times by 2 to get the side of the x and that, because there's two of those shorter.
Perfect. Ones. And that would be if we would know the length of this leg, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Very good.
But this is the roof.
Whoever followed that, raise your hands. Okay. You had a few, Gilbert. Good. Yeah, that was great.
If this is the roof of the gazebo, though, you're also going to have a big figure in pitch, because that runs a vacuum right from that.
Good. Okay. Anything else on that one? We're going to move along if there is nothing else on that one. Anybody?
But in the area of the hexagon, in the length of the base, I can figure it out for you.
You could do that quickly, right? Yeah. Yeah. And that's all fun and it's good stuff. Okay, so let's keep on going then. And we are going to go straight into mental math. So recap from yesterday. Where could I stand that you could see? Can you see way up top here? You can't
yeah,
see up top
yeah,
there?
I can see all right. There.
What if I would stand over here?
I'm sure you can
see. No, it's okay. So, recap. 11 times 431. Write it down on your paper, please. 11 times 431. And do we need, should I go through one of them? Remember, you're going to have your 4 and your 1 as your inside and outside digit. And then you're going to be adding your 3 and your 1 for your second digit, your 4 and your 3. Go ahead and write your answer down. And then 11 times 689, and no apologies for putting the bar or the carrying in there. 11 times 689. Everybody remember that? We come on across, and we do 25 times 25. Remember, your 1s and 10s place are going to be the 25, and then 2 times what to get your 100s?
3.
2 times 3, thank you. Come across to 55 times 55. Again, 25 will be your 1s and 10s, and then 5 times what for your 100s?
6.
Or 100 and. And we'll move straight down to this one. Numbers that sum to 10 and have the same digit in the tens place. 4 times 6, 24, and then 2 times?
3.
Good. And 9 times 1 for?
9.
09.
09, thank you. And 5 times?
16.
Good. All right, so let's read them off. Just say the answers and I'll write them down and hopefully you all agree. Somebody say it?
4,500.
Keep going.
7,571.
And I am not looking at the problem, so if they're wrong, somebody's going to have to stop me. Go ahead.
6,725.
3,025. And
624.
Good. Okay, all good. Anybody wrong? Did you get them all correct this time? Any questions on how they work? Any questions on how they work? Are we all satisfied? So somebody asked why it works to take this digit and the next higher digit for the multiplication to fill the hundreds place, hundreds and thousands. And I told you it's just because it works, right? Remember that? Okay, so I was looking at that a little longer to see if I could figure out a pattern, figure out a reason why it works. And this is the closest that I can get to an explanation. If we would count by 10, 10, 20, 30, 40, and I had done it quite a bit more, but if we would do this, and you square 10, what's your answer for 10 squared?
100.
Good. And 20 squared?
400.
Good. So we know that anything between 10 and 20 is going to come between 100 and 400, correct? Mm-hmm. So when you have the number 15, which would be the only 5 between 10 and 20, right? Mm-hmm. When we have the number 15, we know that 5 times 5 is going to equal 25. We multiply this one by the next larger to get the first part. Does that kind of make sense? Mm-hmm. So we could try one out here, 35 and 35. 5 times 5 is 25. We multiply this by the next larger and is smack dab in between it. And it works out each time. So maybe that helps explain it just a little bit. All right, more mental math. This one probably doesn't make any sense. Now, I'm going to try to go slowly today so you enjoy this, so we can savor the moment. So, this is something that's bothered me, and I just think math is so orderly, so why can this not work? If 15 times 39 equals 585, does 14, one fewer, times 40, one larger, equal 585? Yes or no? No, of course not.
584.
Why not? What's that?
584.
Okay, so why not? Why can that not work? And can anything like that work?
Your checkerboard.
checkerboard. There you go. There you go. Math is so orderly, I just think it has to be able to work. So, I was reading up on this, and this is a graph that I found that you're welcome to write information down from. I'm sure you can find it online if you have access to that as well, or purchase this book. And he has maybe not quite as detailed as what I have on the board, but he has a really nice graph in here as well. And this is what I would like to look at. We can't do this, all right? We know this doesn't work, but what we're going to look at today does work, and this is all things, these are things we can do mentally again. Some of these are what he has in the book, others are ones that I added in. So if you would find a white spot on your paper and write a few labels down, I would love if you would do this, just so that you can also connect to it a little better. Your first label needs to say numbers that add to 20, 26, and 16. Numbers that add to 20, 26, and 16. If you would leave a little space and write another label, distance from largest would be your next label. You can write that however you care to. I was sort of pushed for room here. Your next one is going to be products. Okay, so for information's sake, distance from largest is just going to be a single row of numbers. We're just going to have a single row of numbers. This is going to be a set of three numbers, so you need a little bit of room under products. This is going to be three sets of two numbers. All right, and then finally, the products, you know, I should have gone like this. It is possessive in this case. Products difference from 100, 169, and 64. And if you'll bear with me a little, we'll go through this slowly and try to make sure we can fill the numbers in, then we should be able to make sense of it when we're all done. All right, so the easy part first. You can take any number and plug them in. I think the even numbers are, you can take any even number. Even numbers work the best at this point to help to be able to understand this squaring process. 20, 26, and 16 are all even, and these are the factors that sum to 20. So you see we have 10 plus 10 working our way down this side and up this side corresponding. So if you could do that on your paper and just write below the 20, write 10, 10, 9, 11, 8, 12, 7, 13, and 6, 14. And you can just keep on going. This is not comprehensive, but this gets us started at least. And then if you want to start with the 26, obviously you'll start with 13 and 13. 16 will be 8 and 8. Work your way down the left column and up the right column as you go. Quickly fill these in. Where are we? 12. And then 8, you do the same thing. Caught up there. All right, distance from the largest, and this simply means distance from the largest number is of course zero, kind of a place filler here. How far are we from the largest number? We'll just use the 20 line for instance. So how far are we from 10 when we've come to 9 and 11?
9 and 11.
Yes. Sorry, how far is 10 from 9 and 11?
1.
Very good. So, and then how far is 8 from 8 and 12? How far are they from 10?
2.
Good. So keep going. Fill them out. Go down through 1, 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Simple enough, right? Now we fill in the products. What's the product of 8 and 8?
64.
So we have our products here. So you should have, under products, you should have written 100, 169, and 64. All right, now, this is where it gets interesting. So, and this guy who wrote the book said that he actually discovered this before he read it anywhere. He was traveling the subway and needed something to do. So he was thinking of all the numbers that equal to 10, that sum to 10. Two digits that sum to 10. And when he got done thinking of that, he was like, okay, so what if I start multiplying those numbers? What happens to them?
and he wanted to see what would amount to the biggest amount. And of course, 10 times 10 did. Then he started seeing a correlation. 100, 99, 96. Is that a pattern? So we went 1, 2, 3, 4. We have that. But how about the 100, 99, 96? And we're just going to stay under 100 here now. Don't worry about the 169 and the 64. So we're at a distance from 100 when we come down. So we have 0, first of all, of course, because we're right at 100 on this 10 times 10, 0. And we're 0 away. When we went to 99, now how far are we away from 100? Of course, just 1, right? When we went to 96, now how far away are we from 100?
4.
Keep going. What's next?
9.
What was that?
9.
9. We're now 9 away. Very good. And one more.
16.
16. Is there a pattern?
Squaring the distance from the largest.
Isn't that cool? It's squaring the distance from the largest. So we have 1 squared, right? Or 2 squared, 3 squared, and 4 squared. Now, is this useful? Or not?
Probably.
I'm just glad you're here to tell you this joke. Here's another question for you. Let's look at this one, 169, and see if this lines up again with what we had going on here. So 13 times 13 was 169. What's 12 times 14?
168.
1 squared. What is 11 times 15? Guess, come on.
64.
Subtract 2 squared.
165.
5, there you go, 165. Yes. And you keep working your way down. Subtract 9 and subtract 16. It works on all of them equally. You can plug them in, and that's how it works. Now, is this useful or isn't it useful? So let's say that we're taking, remember what I mentioned here? And it just doesn't work. So is there something that would work? How about if we're going like this, and we're going 15 times 15? So what? How do we say we do that?
You mean 1 times the next higher number?
Correct. So our answer is?
225.
Okay. So is there any way that we could make this useful, staying in the tens between 10 and 20? Are you following what's going on? Let me just make a little room. We're going to make some room. We'll just do it up top. We'll get rid of this. And I think I'm going to actually use a problem. Well, let's just use the 13. Why don't we use 13 for instance? So we're going to go 13. I'm going to say we're squaring 13. And now we know here that 13 squared is 169 because we've been working with it, right? But there would have been a way to do this and think that 13 is 3 digits away from 10, right? Mm-hmm. Since it's 3 digits away from 10, we can put the 10 down here and 3 digits higher. So we have a positive 3 here, a negative 3 here, and we can bring it back together again. What's this answer? The 10, 16 times 10? How do we get the 9 on there? 3 squared. And we're 3 steps away from. So you see how quickly you can think when we move to the 10 and the 16. We have gone 3 steps away from 13. You all see how quickly we can do that in our heads? So we could think 3 squared, 9. And you don't have to go further than 5 if you think about rounding up and down. So you don't have to add more than a 25 when you're done. Because you can go from 0 to 5, and then 5, or from 1 to 5, and then 5 to 9, you can round up and down. So I'll show you another one. This one's going to be maybe just a little bit harder, but you can see how it works both ways. We're going to use the number 77, and we're going to square it, and we can square it mentally. And I'm just going to show you on the diagram how it's done. So 77, are we going to use, what would you use, a 70 or an 80 if you're working with 77? Our next closest 10 would use 80, probably, right? 80. So if we have gone down, we've gone a negative 3 and made this an 80, what does the top need to be?
72.
Oops, positive 3. I wrote it wrong. Why didn't you tell me? Positive 3, thank you. Okay, next.
74.
Negative 3, 74. Very good. Okay. And now we can do that, right? Can we do that in our heads? So put it in two pieces.
592.
592, is he correct?
With the 0. 5,901.
So if we would think of, do this how you want to, but I think the quickest way on this, I'm sorry you can't see, I think the quickest way on this is 80 times the 70, don't you think? 80 times the 70, and then 80 times 4, right? And we add that together, and what was your answer again? Somebody help me.
5,920.
Yeah. Are you doing the whole thing? You're just doing the 5920 right now, right?
That's yeah, 5920, yeah.
All right, so 5920. And what do we need to add on? How many steps away are we?
Three
steps away. What's 3 squared?
Nine.
So what's the answer?
5929.
5929, right? Makes perfect sense.
And if you watch it, plus 9 or the 3 squared, so 5929. And if you watch this very, very carefully, you never have to add big numbers on. Now we're going to do it not the wrong way,
it's actually not wrong at all, but it's a harder way. We're going to make this a 7. Let's go negative 7, right? And go to 70 and go positive 7, which is going to give us a what?
84.
So if we had not just done what you did, it might be a little bit harder. But you see how we're going to have to add a 49? When we square the 7, we have to add a 49. So watch where you come to in your 5s, and you can do it a lot more efficiently. So anything 5 or greater, I round up. Anything less than 5, I round down. Just a simple rounding rule. The other thing that happens with that is you could spend a lot of time trying to figure out which way to go if you don't just give yourself a simple rule. Give yourself a simple rule, and I think that one goes the fastest. Now, what are your questions on this? And what? Yes, go ahead.
How do you work with a slow student trying to teach
them
that?
So a slow student will not enjoy this. I won't make any bones about that. A slow student won't enjoy this. But I think it's important that as teachers, we get a grasp of it. Because if we get a grasp of this, then we can make simple things simpler. You know, if you can see through things like this and do them yourself, you can make simple things simpler, I think. Other questions? Other input? Any other ways that you can think of using this? Why don't you make a diagram in your paper? You try one. Maybe pick a number, or should I read some numbers off? You want to pick a number? Be easy on yourself, unless you want to really borrow. Yes?
Would it work the same with
3-digit numbers? So let's take a look at that right now. How about it? Let's see here. Give me a 3-digit number.
597.
597, okay. Make the last one as large as you can, right? And you're talking now, what was your question, Jordan? Going 590 and 600 and negative and positive? Is that your question?
Well, we're just using the same system. It would be like 580, 600, and 600.
So I think rule number 3 in teaching math is that you're supposed to try things, right? Let's try it. Do you want to get your calculators out? I don't mind if you get your calculators out and try this. We're going to go 597. Should we go 600. So positive 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
600. I've never done this, Jordan, so thank you for the question. And minus 3?
594.
Good. Okay, grab your calculators and square it, unless you want to do it in your head. I don't mind that either. And that actually would be simple to do.
It would be.
You can hang on to your pieces, right? You have little pieces in your mind that you can hang on to. And get rid of this so we aren't writing a lie down here. What's the answer for this one? Go ahead. 356400. All right. Now, all that we're adding is, where are we? 3 squared, 9. So if you want me to make a guess, I'm going to say it does not work. Does it work or does it? Have your calculators out?
It worked perfect.
Work perfect. Nice. I guessed wrong. Work perfect? Did you try it? Who did the calculator? Okay, good. So cool. Another one? Let's do another one. That's awesome.
The problem is you still have to use a calculator. So we might as well just square it.
You. I thought you said this was easy to do.
Well, I'll just take it apart.
597. So what are we? 3 off 600. We could have probably done that even without. But anyway. All right. Give us another one. Another 3-digit number real quickly. 659, okay. So we're similar now. And what do you want to go to? 660? 660 and, right? 660 and, let's see here. 660, positive 1, negative 1, 668. Oh, you're right, thank you, 658. And what's the answer? Use your calculators, it's fine. What's your answer? Anybody have it? No calculators out, I can grab one.
434280.
434280. And how many steps? One off, so what?
One.
Does it come out correctly? Anybody try it?
Same thing,
comes out correctly. Okay, good. Here's the other thing. So did we save any time? Not really. Do we understand more about how the numbers work? I do. I think it just helps us to understand how the pieces of numbers work, and it helps us to understand how reliable numbers are. Remember, figures do not lie. They just simply don't lie. They're not going to lie. All right, more questions on this? Do you want to put a diagram down so you have one, so you have something to work with when you get back to the classroom? Yes, Gilbert.
Would you be able to put, could you put that method into like two sentences?
Explain yourself.
Like, could you give us the gist of what to do in two sentences?
Let's see. I didn't think of it that way.
To me, it just makes more sense when I just hear like words like that.
I didn't think of it that way. Anybody want to help us? Yes.
Or can you? Is there a way you can use that chart down there at the bottom? Are we doing the same similar thing?
Oh, sure. That was just to explain where the numbers go. This is what we are using. We are using this. I just wanted you to get a visual of where the numbers go. In fact, he doesn't have all this in the book, and maybe it would have been easier if I would have gone like that, right? And like this, and left it like that, and you could have seen, and then I would have just said you can put any number in that square and put its factors below it that sum to the number, and it works out the same way. That might have been easier. I just wanted us to see that this will always come out to 1 squared, 2 squared, 3 squared, 4 squared, and you're going to find that in Pascal's triangle, too. But anyhow, two sentences. I don't know about that. Ask me tomorrow. Ask me tomorrow, Gilbert. I'll try it, okay? I'll try it by tomorrow. Any other questions on this? Do we more or less understand what's going on? Any questions with it?
You're squaring it using an easier number.
Correct.
Then you would add
a number. So there is actually a reason for not having done this until today. I wanted us to get a decent grasp on what happens here, on squaring these. I wanted to get a decent grasp on that, and then to realize that we were just moving from that to the nearest 10 that we can work with, right? And then keeping track of our positives and negatives. If there's anything that's confusing for students, at least the way what I find is positives and negatives, whether it's in algebra, whether it's in math, they just simply don't get it. I think my opinion is that we don't teach negatives well in lower grades. We say minus for too long. That's my opinion. I wish we would say negative a long time before we actually do, because they come to 8th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, and they're like, well, it's minus. No, it's not minus. It's negative, which is plus minus, right? So you have a negative. And it's hard for them to switch. I found that to be a very, very difficult thing for them to do. Any other questions or input on this one before we move on?
We don't round it. 35 and then use that method?
Any reason we don't? Okay, go ahead. Say that again, Jerome.
So let's say the number is 27.
Mm-hmm.
We go down through to 25.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong.
Not after him? Okay.
No.
I was wrong.
Because
I was wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
Those are three golden words. I was wrong.
We multiply, it would have to be like 20. You would put in by.
Okay. And you were back to doing what I was putting up here to start with, right? Where you just take a random number, 15 times 39, and go, is 14 times 40 the same thing? Not quite. Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to mortgages now, if you're done with this. Everybody, any questions on this yet? Okay, so let's go back to mortgages then. And if we want to pick up where we left off yesterday on that, we'll have to get rid of a few things here. Simple interest formula, please.
I am moving the
charges. Thank you. What does half have to do with it, right? Okay, so simple interest formula, I equals PRT, and let's see, did we use 100,000 yesterday? I think we used 100,000, so we're going to go principal of 100,000, and we used a rate of 7%, I believe, and a time 15 years. Is that correct? How many months in 15 years?
170.
Almost. 180, thank you. And why is that significant?
That's your time.
The number of payments.
Number of payments, most of the time, number of payments, which gives me pause. I need to stop here. Paul's not in class today. He had to teach this afternoon. But he said, remember he said that they started with the $100,000 loan and it worked out fine for them. One thing he said after class was that if I would have given him a chance, he would have told us that he was making payments every 2 weeks, if possible. We talked about the double payment, remember? He was actually making payments every 2 weeks to cut down on principle more quickly. Now, I want to show you one thing before we go further into this, and that is I have the paper here of the $25,000 loan. When you make your first payment, and this is the reason I'm using the 25 instead of the 100,000 is because I have it all broken down, printed out in a breakdown of interest versus principal. So if you start with a $25,000 loan and you make your first payment of $495.03, you're going to be paying $495.03 for the next 5 years at 7% to pay this off. The very first payment you make has interest of equals interest of $145.83 and principal of $349.20. If I had thought about it, I would have printed one that had a larger, that was a larger loan for a larger period of time, because this number has a much larger discrepancy. However, this is what my dad taught me. He said that when I take any loan out of any size, he said, if you ever do, be sure when you start out that you do as many double payments as possible. And I'm going to write down the next couple numbers just for, and I know we've talked about this just very briefly before ending yesterday. 351233, 35328, 35328. All right, there we go. So what is interesting about this is, like I said before, this equals this plus this. If we take this payment and add 351.23 to it and add 353.28, as you can imagine, there's interest on this side that is slowly dropping, but it's still in the 140s. We can actually omit the interest as we go down through if we're making this all in one smooth payment. Okay, and we talked about that yesterday, but what I did not mention is that the very last one looks like this. Payment number 60, so this is a 5-year loan, payment number 60 looks like this. So we have the we have $495.03, of course, like we said, we'd be paying all the way through, and now the interest has gone to $287. And the principal was $492.16. So you see why my dad said the first half of the mortgage is when it's important to make the double payment? Because the last half of the mortgage, you're hardly paying any interest anymore, especially not on a small loan. So he drilled that into me. He said, if you can just remember that when you're on the top side of a loan, he said, pay everything you can as quickly as you can. He said, when you get toward the end, yeah, you know, it's not fun to pay interest, but it doesn't hurt nearly as much. Now, that leads us into the half concept that we were talking about. And what I was taught in school, unless I just stumbled across it somewhere, I'm not sure, but what I learned somewhere along the line was, if you want to figure out what this payment is, the $495.03, if you want to figure out what that payment is, you take PRT 1/2, because you are paying the interest on this for approximately half the time. Did you notice how the interest went from, what was the top number? Well, the bottom number was 287. There it is. Went from 145.83 to 287. So if you split that in half the time you were paying the top side, half the time the bottom side. So let's just do this quickly. What would you split in half if you'd be teaching your students here? We just want to go half. Yes, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so at the halfway point is where your interest.
You know, it's a good question. Is it exactly at 30? I'll read it to you here. On 30 it says, let's see here. The 30th payment.
Except because the principal left halfway through.
Why is he saying that? He said we still have 3/4 of the principal left halfway through. Why is he saying that? Is that sensible?
Much of your
payment has been interest. It's not at the 30, but it's. Let's just see where it switches. We went from 145. Let's see, 145. We want to go down to 90. So when we are at an interest, 145. Is that for real? We're all done. Okay. Well, then we're going to have to stop here. So your interest doesn't drop significantly. Doesn't drop significantly until year 4, really. You know, year 3, 4 is when it really starts to drop, all right? So just watch that very carefully. Now, we are going to finish this time. I'm not going to carry this into tomorrow, Gilbert. You ask about that 0.9425, right? So, and I'm really glad I saved it for today. You know why? I was testing my hypothesis this afternoon because that's just something I landed on myself, and I was afraid it wasn't going to work out. And this is what I found. Let's do this quickly. 100,000. What would your students, or how would you teach them to split this? PRT half. What would you tell them to do?
Split the time.
Split the time. Okay, so you'd make this 7.5?
I need 100,000.
100,000?
Easier.
What? Yeah, all right. All right. That's probably what I would do. So we go 50, and we have 7% and 15. So shall we just do it quickly? And how about this one? Let me do it the other way. Do you do this one with your students? Do you do that one at all? Please do if you don't. Like, students, they get frustrated with it. To start with, they're like, that doesn't make any sense. How can you just bring the zeros down? But please, please teach them that. You can just drop them down. It's almost as fast as mental math, right? 1, 2. So we have 3,500. And that 3,500 represents what?
Interest.
Interest? We didn't put the time in yet, correct? So that would just be for the 1 year, correct? So we're going to take the 3,500. Times 15, and how would you tell them to do that? We can do this mentally, right?
25.
What did you say?
The last two are 25.
So we have this and this to put together. The 15 and the 3,500 to put together. 15 times 3,500. What was that?
42,500.
42,500. 35,000 is where I would go. Is that where you would go? 35,000? And then add on another 17,5? Or is that too... Is that too much? Is that too difficult? So I would have made this a 10 immediately, the 15 a 10, and gone 10 times 3,500, gotten to 35,000, thought what half of 35,000 is, and added that to the 35,000. Is that too many steps?
Mm.
All right?
Why didn't you go 15 times 35 and add the zeros on it?
Yeah.
Could have done that as well.
Yeah.
Sure, great. Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We all good with that? All right, so what's the answer?
47.5.
All right, good. So we have 47.5. No, that's not correct. Incorrect.
No, it's 62.
You're close. You added your 17.5 to 30, correct? Instead of to 35?
62.500, yeah.
Andrew's disagreeing with 62.500. I love when students disagree. Gilbert, help us out.
52.5, yeah.
52.5.
All right. Because.
Who said why? Yes, go ahead.
You got to go 3 times.
So how about if we just do this?
3 times 2, right?
What?
3 times 2.
3 times 2. Let's just go 15 times 35. Shall we do that? All right, you say the answers. I like doing this too. Just have the students say them. So go ahead. Say the answers. What's that right now?
45.
Oh, you just said 45. Good, go ahead.
Five.
Right. Everybody see the proofs in the pudding, right? 52.5 is correct. 52.5 is correct. All right, so we go like this, and we have our 52.5. And what does that represent? What's that?
The total amount of interest.
Total amount of interest. Now we add that to what? Which gives us 152.5, right? We divide that by?
180.
It was, we switched from 5 years back to 15, did you notice? Right, so we're back to 15. So we divide that by 180. What's the answer? Somebody want to give that to us real quickly? You have your calculator out. 152.5 divided by 180. No calculators? 152.5 divided by 180. I do, yeah.
847.2
repeating. Now, here's where the 0.9425 comes in. 847.2. This is a quick way to figure out about what your mortgage payment is. The problem with this formula is that it is always between 90 and 100% of the total. It's always just a little bit less. At 7%, with 15 years, if you take this divided by 0.9425, because it is 0.9425 of the total, you will come within like a couple of pennies. Now, that is if you keep this and this the same. You can move that number. I moved it up as far as 90 million. This loan up to 90 million, and the multiplier came out the same every time. I was right down 0.9425 of the total is what I came to every single time. The problem with it is you cannot use 0.9425 if you change this or this. Right? It's always in the 90s, so you're within 10% of where you need to be. But it's always below, just the fuzz below. And I haven't exactly figured that one out if you want to try working on that. It has to have to do with where your interest, yeah, how the interest is being charged, where the percent of interest is being charged on the principal, if that makes any sense. So, any questions on this? If you do PRT half, you're going to come within 90% of your monthly payment. Remember to add it on, divide by the amount of months, and you're good to go. Any questions?
Did you add a debt to the principal and then divide it?
So I always go to my monthly payment first. This was the monthly payment that I came up with using this. PRT half divided by 180. No. PRT half plus 100,000.
Yeah.
Divided by 180 equals this. Divided by 0.9425 comes to within just pennies of what the computer would tell you. Make sense? Any questions? And it will work every time up to 90 million. It was so much fun because I keep moving the numbers, and every time, 0.9425, 0.9425, there are always a bunch of other numbers after it. But still, it always, and I keep thinking if I just push this a little further, we'll get out of it. I just wouldn't move. So there we are, and that's numbers for you. Any questions? Yes?
So your actual payment on this loan is
$898.91.
There you go. Let me see what the computer said. I might actually have a copy of that somewhere. I think I do. 890. Is that 100? I do. I'll have it tomorrow. Sorry, it's here somewhere. I know it is. But remember, we had done 900 yesterday. We had done 900, so we're right. It was 898 and change. All right, you're dismissed. Don't forget the three men booking their hotel room, and get us an answer for that tomorrow. And we're going to move to something completely different tomorrow.
Let's fire the bellboy.
Fire the bellboy, okay. Good answer.